This is All Things Considered on New Hampshire Public Radio. I'm Peter Biello. As part of our primary coverage, we're looking at some of the experiences that have shaped the candidates who are running for governor. NHPR's Casey McDermott joins us now to talk about Republican Frank Edelblum and the record he established during his first and only term in the House of Representatives. Hi, Casey.
Hi, Peter.
So, Casey, Edelblum is relatively new to political office, correct?
Right. And if you ask him, he'd say that's a good thing. It's his first term in the New Hampshire House of Representatives. He was elected in 2014, and he represents a handful of towns in Hillsborough County. In the legislature, he sits on the Child and Family Law Committee, the Finance Committee, and a special committee on public employee pensions. Outside of the legislature, for what it's worth, he also serves as a water commissioner in his hometown of Wilton. But overall, he actually has the shortest record of public service. In that time, he's racked up a pretty solidly conservative record, and that in turn has paid off for him on the campaign trail. He has a lot of conservative groups that have taken notice, and they've endorsed him in his run for governor.
And keeping in mind that he hasn't been in the legislature for very long, what kind of legislation is he putting forward?
So one of his first bills, for example, was a resolution that would have applied to the United States Congress to convene a convention of the states. So basically like a modern day constitutional convention. This is kind of a fringe issue, but in line with his emphasis generally on being a constitutional conservative. Some of the things that were cited in the legislation was to guard against future abuses of power by the federal government. They cited the crushing national debt that the government has created, and there was a long list of other kind of grievances that they articulated in that legislation. Again, this was very on brand with his kind of conservative image that he played up in the legislature and now in his gubernatorial campaign.
Okay, and what are some of the other bills he's proposed?
The first year he was in the legislature, he sponsored five bills. Two of them became law. One of those addressed pipeline siting issues, and the other one addressed taxes for charter schools. This year, his second year in office, he sponsored 26 bills total, and four of them have become law. The legislation he's backed has reflected a lot of the themes that we're hearing from him in his campaign: constitutional rights, free speech, gun rights, and so on. He was the prime sponsor of a bill that specifically outlined protections for protests, petitions, and other acts of expression on college campuses. That one didn't pass. On gun rights, he sponsored a bill that would have allowed the National Guard to carry concealed weapons at National Guard facilities. And you might remember that this question came up following a shooting at military facilities last year. That one also didn't pass. He also was a prime sponsor, though, on a bill to raise the cap on net metering. And that one did pass with pretty broad bipartisan support. And he talks a lot about the innovation economy and removing barriers that might stifle individuals or business growth. So that legislation was really in line with his philosophy there.
Where has he been on some of the other big policy debates this year?
So here he's also really established himself as both a fiscal and a social conservative. On Medicaid expansion, he was front and center at the committee hearings to testify against extending that program. He argued that because of the costs, it was a bad idea, but also because it kind of trapped people into poverty. And then there was his testimony on a completely different issue, a proposal to ban LGBT conversion therapy for minors. He spoke for more than 20 minutes against it. He stressed repeatedly that he wasn't necessarily there to argue for or against conversion therapy itself, but he went almost section by section, trying to pick apart the way the bill was written and some of the studies that it referenced about the harm that could come from subjecting kids to that kind of therapy. So those are two examples of the issues where he was really outspoken in the legislature.
Okay, so presumably all of these candidates want to appeal to conservatives in a Republican Party. So how does Edelblum fit in with the rest of the field?
You don't really see his opponents going after him. Mostly they're too busy attacking each other. But you do see him taking aim at other candidates questioning their conservative credentials. I've seen him go after Chris Sununu quite a few times, specifically on a few votes that Sununu took as a member of the executive council. This one that Edelblum brings up repeatedly has to do with the Board of Education and a member there who Edelblum views as opposing school choice. He's also gone after Ted Gatzis, and he's taken issue with him rejecting Common Core, but Edelblum will note that the curriculum in Manchester includes a lot of Common Core standards. So, you know, Edelblum will try to kind of paint Gatzis as someone who is maybe going against what he says he's doing in his actions.
You mentioned earlier that he's earned endorsements from a number of grassroots or advocacy organizations. Can you give us a sense of what that list looks like?
There's the 603 Alliance, which is a grassroots conservative group that backed Ted Cruz during the primary. The NH Liberty Alliance, New Hampshire Right to Life, the New Hampshire Conservative Majority Project. He's won a number of straw polls and has also signed on to the Americans for Prosperity Pledge. So he, you know, has some credentials with that more maybe libertarian leaning group. And it's unclear just how much sway these groups actually hold, but they act as kind of a signal to potential supporters that he's established a record as a conservative from several angles.
And how is he framing this record on the campaign trail?
So the big thing is that he's trying to turn his lack of political experience into an asset. He boasts about being the only candidate who's not a lifelong or a career politician. And in a year where there's a lot of buzz about kind of so-called outsider candidates, that makes sense. If you visit his Facebook page or get his emails or listen to him on the trail, he does make a lot of references to his endorsements from those conservative groups. But he also says he doesn't necessarily want to be typecast as only someone who appeals to the right wing of the Republican Party. I asked him about the support that he was building among conservatives last month, and here's how he responded.
It's not just conservative. It's across a lot of different sectors. I mean, we have the endorsement of the Marijuana Project. I mean, so think about the headline. It was in the Union Leader, you know, that they've endorsed, you know, liberal Democrat Steve Marchand and conservative Republican Frank Edelblue. So, I mean, I'm a very liberty-oriented person, and so we're going to bring in a lot of different folks into this campaign.
We'll find out on Tuesday just how many people he was able to bring in.
All right. Well, Casey, thank you very much.
Thanks, Peter.
That's NHPR's Casey McDermott. And for more on Edelblue and all of the major candidates running to be New Hampshire's next governor, head on over to nhpr.org for comprehensive profiles, comparisons of their policy positions, and more.